The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So again, a really warm welcome. For anybody who's just joining, or perhaps if you're listening to this as a separate offering on Audio Dharma, warm welcome. Tonight I'd like to share that I saw I was reading the Theragata. Sometimes we talk about the Theragata, that is the verses of the nuns, the first Buddhist nuns, and the verses are kind of like their awakening verses. And there's a collection with the monks as well, the Theragata. And the first verse in that collection, I don't know, it has a nice feeling to it. And I thought I would share this and talk a little bit about it. So the monk's name is Subhuti. And this verse, you know, these are attributed to their awakening experience or something like that. So it's related to that. And this verse has one stanza, just one. But it has two parts. And it goes like this. My little hut is roofed and pleasant, sheltered from the wind. So, rain, sky, as you please. My mind is serene and freed. I practice wholeheartedly. So, rain, sky, as you please. So I like this. First is this idea of this cozy little place. My little hut is roofed and pleasant, sheltered from the wind. So in this location, there's no sense that things have to be different than how they are. The wind can do as it pleases in the sky. It can be cloudy, it can be sunny, it can be rainy. And remember that this is in ancient India. I mean, the sun is, you know, just something to be taken care of just as much as the rain might be. So the first part is about having this sense of coziness by being in the little hut. And then the second part, my mind is serene and freed. I practice wholeheartedly. So rain, sky, as you please. So maybe a simile or a metaphor, kind of like the hut. Or maybe it's literal, right? It's part of the fun of some of these verses, is that there's a number of different ways we can interpret them. But the second part of the verse is the internal experience of being serene and freed and practicing wholeheartedly. Maybe if you're already freed, practice looks a little bit different. I didn't look up the Pali, maybe I should have, to see what is this word that's getting translated as practice. But for me, what struck me, my attention, was this wholeheartedly. So there's no barriers, there's nothing that's in the way, but just with this mind that is serene, has some calmness, some collectedness, and freed. That is, it has some flexibility and malleability. It's not brittle. And maybe we can interpret freed also as not having any defilements, not having greed, hatred, or delusion. And so this, in the second part, there's also this sense of confidence, this sense of steadiness that comes from practice. And this, maybe even a sense of spaciousness, even though it's a little hut, this feeling like it doesn't matter if it rains or if it's sunny or if it's cloudy, but having that flexibility gives, in my mind, has a sense of spaciousness. So these descriptors, these adjectives, the word almost slipped my mind there, of the experience of having some steadiness, having some ease, some confidence, maybe some spaciousness, we might call that equanimity. There's a number of different ways we can define equanimity, but one is a steadiness of the mind, of heart, in the face of all conditions and experiences, a kind of unshakability with a sense of inner balance. And also, equanimity has a quality of seeing the bigger picture, you know, not caught up so much in exactly what's happening right now, but putting things in context and seeing the bigger picture, seeing the, having a wider view of what's happening, and not being swept away so much by what's happening at this particular moment. I imagine that we've all been changed by the course of events from this past year. You know, today's, I'm speaking on the 28th, December 28th, so it's almost the turning of the year. In a few days, it'll be 2021. So I imagine that so many things happened this year and many of us have been changed by it. And maybe we've learned the value of practice, is practicing wholeheartedly in whatever way we can, in a way that makes sense for us. Learning the value of community, missing people when we can't be with them, and maybe appreciating people that we are connecting with in ways that we didn't imagine connecting. And I know somebody who, after having not really speaking with their siblings for decades, not because there was any adversity, just, you know, just hadn't really kind of filled in with their life. But then with 2020, some one thing led to another, and now all four siblings are speaking every week. You know, somebody else has a family that, you know, extended family that does this. So in one way, is maybe one way we've been changed is appreciating community. I know many of you, I imagine many of you, are listening to Gil at 7 a.m., and kind of that delightful community that arises there on YouTube and even here on Monday nights. This community too, seeing the chat. It's heartwarming and it's meaningful to know that we're not practicing alone, even though there may not be anybody else in the room with us while we're meditating. Maybe something else, a way that we've been changed is gaining some clarity about our strengths and our capacities. And maybe we've discovered that we can meditate when it's metaphorically raining or metaphorically sunny. Maybe we can have this sense of being in a cozy hut, having a refuge, having a place of safety. Maybe if that's only sometimes. And to be sure, not everybody has this, and not everybody experienced that. But I also don't want to dismiss people who have discovered greater capacities, greater skills, or greater strengths that they didn't know that they had. Many of us have been tested. We've had to do things that we didn't think that we wanted to do. Perhaps see things that we didn't want to see about ourselves, about our society, the terrible injustices, the way our government works, the pandemic, the way our bodies work, and the mystery of so much of it. And so being stretched by all of this, being tested in some ways, has increased our capacity to be with what's uncomfortable, to be with what's difficult. And maybe we used to talk about, well, we can't wait till things get back to normal. I don't think anybody's thinking that things will be normal the way that they were before. But perhaps we've been stretched in such a way that we won't go back to the way that we were before. And that we are able to have a little bit more equanimity. Even if we weren't purposefully cultivating that, we discovered that things that we thought weren't so important become important, or things that we were taking for granted, community, friends, family, co-workers, celebrations. And maybe we have a greater appreciation for what's possible with the internet, and maybe a greater appreciation for spending time outside, going for walks, and spending more time with our furry families, the dogs and cats we share our homes with. So this idea of having some greater equanimity, there's a number of ways. I mentioned that we can talk about equanimity, and maybe we've inadvertently cultivated some, have a bigger perspective. But I heard a Vipassana teacher say that a Tibetan teacher had said that equanimity is being equally near all things. Being equally near all things. That is to not push away or not to pull close our experiences. So not to push away, not to have aversion for those things that we don't like, those things that are uncomfortable, unpleasant. And not to hold tight really close to us those things that are enjoyable and pleasant, and not to cling to them, not to crave them, but to hold all things equally near, being equally near all things. And we might discover that when we do this, when we are able to not be pushing things away or pulling them closer, that there can be a certain amount of steadiness or spaciousness in the mind. And what would it mean to practice with this? What would it mean to embody this, to show up in the world with this way, without putting any pressure on the self, the sense that the self needs to be more of this or less of that, but to practice with a sense of not pushing and not pulling, not aversion and craving or clinging, and not putting pressure on things to be different, but instead to just being present, just noticing. What happens when we practice in this way? So some supports that might help us to practice with this way is to cultivate a sense of well-being, some happiness, and some of that is comfort or ease. I talked about that in the guided meditation, is tuning into any pleasant sensations, or maybe a better way to say it is to breathe in a way that's comfortable. We've all tried this, just chasing pleasant sensations, and we know it doesn't work so well. Sometimes we get them, sometimes we don't, but they're always fleeting. But is there a way in which we can just have a sense of well-being just from the ordinary, just from everyday experiences? Another support for equanimity is some of the heart practices we might do. loving kindness practice, compassion practice, sympathetic joy. All of these bring kind of a warmth, a spaciousness, and an ease. Just simple kindness also brings that sense of goodness inside. And these can be a tremendous support for equanimity. We all know this, that when we have a feeling of some well-being or some contentment, it's much easier to hold difficulties, to be with difficulties, and to meet the difficulties, as well as not to slide into giddiness or slide into grabbing or clinging when things are pleasant that are happening. So one of the supports for cultivating, for practicing in a way in which we can be equally near all things, is to practice in such a way that supports some warm-heartedness, some open-heartedness. And maybe I'll kind of play on this word heart and say, and also to practice wholeheartedly. That is to bring our whole selves to the practice. To as best we can, right? With, again, without this sense of pressure that we have to show up a particular way or that things have to be a particular way. But instead to be like a Subhuti in that verse that I spoke about earlier, saying something like, okay, sky, okay, sun, okay, clouds, whatever you might offer. Something else that we might do that to support some equanimity is to notice what squashes, what constricts, what diminishes any equanimity we might have. There's a number of things, but I'll just mention one here, is that just to be overly concerned with the self, having to build up the self, protect the self, aggrandize the self, flatter the self, hide parts of the self, you know, this overly self-concern turns into selfishness, and it turns into a real constriction of our view, a real constriction of our heart in some way. Just the opposite of equanimity. It's a little bit off balance, and it's a little bit squished, as opposed to being open and spacious. So too much concern with the self often can kind of really hamper equanimity. And so I started this little talk with this verse from Subhuti, from the first verse in the Theragata. And I'd like to share another little poem. This is written, I think, maybe a week ago by Rosemary Traumer. She's this wonderful poet, and she publishes a poem every single day. And I just delight in her poetry. Reading this poem, I felt like it has some of the similar feeling, but here we are in modern times and using modern language, of course. So, Rosemary Traumer, she has this poem that's called Bonfire in the Heart. Bonfire in the Heart by Rosemary Traumer. I throw in any receipts I've been keeping, the ones that record who did what and when. I throw in all the letters I wrote in my head but didn't send. I throw in tickets I didn't buy to places I didn't visit. I throw in all those expectations I had for myself and the world last year. And countless lists of things I thought I should do. I love watching them ignite, turn into embers, to ash. I love the space they leave behind, where anything can happen. I throw in all those expectations I had for myself and the world last year, and countless lists of things I thought I should do. I love watching them ignite, turn into embers, to ash. I love the space they leave behind, where anything can happen. Bonfire in the Heart by Rosemary Traumer. I don't know, I feel so often at the end of the year, we have this idea of like, you know, there's often it's kind of a tradition, right? New Year's resolutions, like all these things that we should do better. It's born out of a sense of inadequacy or self-loathing or something like this. But instead, what is it like to throw away, throw into the bonfire in the heart? So not throw away in a way that's with any ill will or aversiveness, but to fuel this bonfire in the heart. Expectations and receipts about who did what and when, otherwise known as grudges or disappointments, and throw in tickets I didn't buy to places I didn't visit, so more disappointments, and letters I wrote in my head but didn't send, feeling regret, or maybe sometimes we write letters when we're angry. And she ends this with the space they leave behind where anything that can happen. And so we can see this with our meditation practice as well. That is, when we let go, when we allow the warm-heartedness to ignite our aversions, our cravings, when we allow the push and the pull to soften and just lessen, diminish the reactivity to our experiences, both external and internal experiences. When we allow those to soften and to die down, then our perceptions begin to change. The way we see things begins to change. The way we experience things begins to change. As the reactivity softens, the compelling quality of things that are difficult or things that are a little or pleasant, the compelling quality, I need more, I got to get away from this, the compelling quality starts to dwindle also. So this turns into a helpful spiral. If we can soften our reactivity, then the compelling quality softens. If it's less compelling, it's easier to be equanimous. It's easier to not be so reactive. And we can find this spiral of more and more calm, a little more and more collectiveness, a little bit more ease and well-being. And then we can find that in the absence of this push and this pull, this reactivity, there's a warmth, there's a love. There's a connection that fills the space. And so there's so many different ways in which we can calm the reactivity. I mentioned a few about allowing a sense of well-being or contentment or ease, noticing what diminishes our equanimity. Course, meditation practice, concentration practice as well. But whatever way that we can have the push and pull, reactivity, aversion, clinging, quiet down, and then to maybe notice how things become a little bit less compelling. We might think it's just because our equanimity is becoming stronger, but it's both. The objects are becoming less loud, if you will, less, they're not yelling for our interpretation. I'm sorry, they're not yelling for our attention as much, and then it's easier to be equanimous. And then as this kind of like spiral goes down, as the lessening of reactivity, lessening of the compelling nature, there's more room for love. There's more room for connection. There's more room for warmth. It just is naturally there. We don't have to create it. We don't have to look for it. It's just what arises, which of course even supports that experience more. That experience of being able, having some steadiness and some spaciousness, that experience of well-being. So I'm not talking about equanimity, so so it can be one more thing that you should do. Soften any ideas of, well, I want that, I'll grab that. Or soften any ideas like, I'm nowhere near that. But is there a way that we can just recognize how much our capacity has grown this past year? Maybe unwillingly. And can we just appreciate that? And maybe start there. And just start there. And noticing when equanimity arises. And noticing how, as our relationship to the object shift, in some ways the way we perceive the object shifts also. And allow that to be a support. And then touch into the warmth, the sense of connection, the love. I'm using this word love. Maybe it's not the best word, but it has that quality to it. And of course, if we have access to this, we can show up in the world in a different way. Show up for our own life. Show up for those we have contact with, whether it's via Zoom or directly. Whether it's the way we show up as a driver on the streets and highways. So, with a heart full of appreciation and warmth and care, and I'm smiling, I'm wishing everyone a safe, happy 2021. Please take good care of yourself and others. Thank you.